From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dave Gallipoli, with commentary by political scientist Dr. Alan Shartok.
Coming up this week, Lewis Wien loses his battle to force a Republican gubernatorial primary. Attorney General Robert Abrams goes to Washington to discuss oil prices, and a state senator will tour other states to see how convicted rapists are treated. Those stories, Alan Shartok, and much, much more, coming up on this week's edition of the Legislative Gazette. Right-to-life gubernatorial candidate Lewis Wien will appeal a judge's decision to keep him off of next month's Republican primary ballot. Wien says he'll go to the state's highest court if necessary. State Supreme Court Judge William Kennery threw out Wien's lawsuit. Kennery said the lawsuit should have been filed within 10 days of the May GOP convention, but Wien waited 2 months to go to court. Wien claims the only reason he didn't challenge Republican candidate Pierre Rinfrae at the convention was that GOP Chairman J. Patrick Barrett promised Rinfrae's pro-choice plank would be removed from the party platform. After Rinfrae won the nomination, party leaders decided to retain the pro-choice plank. Because of that, Wien asked the court to order a September 11th primary between him and Rinfrae. Rinfrae's campaign had labeled Wien's lawsuit nonsense. Rinfrae spokesman Brian Flood says the decision is right, since the race is really between Rinfrae and Governor Mario Cuomo. Flood also disputed Wien's story of what happened at the convention and why Rinfrae was not challenged there.
Frankly, they're just completely untrue and they're unfounded. And let me add this, that for Mr. Wien to go around attacking the Republican Party, and we certainly see him do that, this is somebody who has said awfully nice things about Mario Cuomo, and his campaign essentially was being run against the Republican, against Mr. Rinfrae. I wonder what his supporters, how his supporters feel about that, considering the fact that he's been so supportive and been a such a good friend of Mario Cuomo's, and certainly their ideologies are in opposition.
Wien says he's attacked Cuomo on the issues, but in a tasteful manner. As for Rinfrae, Wien says he makes the minister Louis Farrakhan look saintly, and called his idea to have counties bid against each other to keep undesirable projects out of their region incredibly stupid.
We don't need that in public life, and no matter what the hired guns of Pierre Rinfrae are going to say, the fact remains he's unqualified to run for governor of the state of New York. He's unqualified to run for any office of the state of New York. He's a man who has never participated, really, in the elective process. He doesn't even vote. And they want me to somehow kowtow to him because he has the Republican banner, this non-Republican, incredible individual. And the fact is, even worse, we have to attack this leadership of the Republican Party that can get a man like Pierre Rinfrae into office or to be a candidate of the party for governor. How sick, how disappointing, how outrageous. And I have to tell you, they're doing everything they can to keep me out of a primary because they're afraid of me. Pierre Rinfrae is trying to focus attention on Cuomo. Debate me. Debate me on any issue you want, Pierre.
Speaking of debates, Rinfrae is once again challenging Governor Cuomo to debate him, but now the challengers are face to face. On Tuesday, Rinfrae was waiting outside of Buffalo's General Mills food plant trying to get Cuomo to commit to a series of one-on-one debates. Rinfrae's efforts have yet to be successful. Cuomo still insists that debates take place with conservative candidate Herb London and right-to-lifer Wien. Cuomo says since you don't see Wien and London popping out of the bushes, Rinfrae must think he's better than them. Meanwhile, negotiators for Cuomo, Wien, and London say they've agreed to hold debates before and after baseball's World Series. As the crisis in the Persian Gulf continues, so does the frustration of Americans over higher gas prices. Since Iraq's invasion of Kuwait, oil prices went up and gas prices soon followed. In the 3 weeks since the invasion, politicians and the general public have let the oil companies know how those price hikes are viewed. With the general public's anger in mind, 35 state attorneys general went to Washington Monday to discuss the price increases with officials from the Justice Department. Among those in Washington was New York State's Attorney General Robert Abrams. Abrams feels many of the price increases have been unnecessary.
Especially the kinds of increases we saw the first few hours after news was let out that the Iraqis had invaded Kuwait, because those the sale of that gasoline should have had no impact at all based upon that news, which was just a couple of hours old. And we did get very strong assurances from the Justice Department, from the head of the Federal Trade Commission, and so I think that New York and all the other states did some important work in Washington.
The Washington trip came on the same day as unleaded gasoline prices hit record highs on New York's Mercantile Exchange. There have been accusations that the Justice Department has not done enough to curtail incidents of price gouging in the past, but Abrams says he was satisfied with the results of the meeting.
I was satisfied today based upon the two-hour meeting that I had this morning in the Justice Department and then the hour meeting we had with the same officials over in the Hall of the States, that they got the message about the tremendous concern that there is not only by governors and state attorneys general, but by the people who are living in the states all across the country in wanting to make sure that whatever powers, resources, laws are available at the federal level, we want them applied in this situation to try to cut back on what many feel have been unwarranted increases in the price of gasoline at the pump.
New York State Attorney General Robert Abrams. Vermont Attorney General Jeffrey Amstoy says officials also exchanged information about oil pricing patterns and developed recommendations for state legislation on price gouging. A coal-fired cogeneration plant proposed for the Saratoga County town of Half Moon has certainly run into its share of political opposition. In New York State alone, the InterPower proposal has been opposed by 9 assemblymen, 3 state senators, and 2 congressmen. Opposition has also come from the neighboring states of Vermont and Massachusetts. Now, the healthcare field has become involved. Brian Shields reports.
The health organizations now opposed to InterPower are the state chapter of the American Lung Association and the Albany County Medical Society. Dr. Harold Sokol says people should not only be concerned about InterPower's effects on their health, they should be afraid.
We are very concerned about the background respiratory conditions that are in the area. We already have a relatively large amount of respiratory disease already present in the Albany area. One of the biggest problems is we do not want to add to this. My colleagues, the other pulmonary physicians, and I all have looked at this particular project and are worried about what this project will do to increase the amount of respiratory disease. We already have enough to do. If this plant even wasn't built, I've got all the environmental problems to handle in my practice. I see these patients every day saying one of the things that we have to worry about is what will this plant add to an already existing bad situation.
Medical specialists are encouraging more research in alternative methods of power such as hydro or natural gas. New York University professor Dr. George Thurston says there is more acid in the air during the summer months. He says that while acid rain damages the environment, no precipitation damages people's lungs.
Well, acid aerosols are not a primary pollutant. In other words, very often it's not released directly into the atmosphere. It's actually released in the form of sulfur dioxide by sources of pollution, especially power plants. And the biggest sources of SO2 in the country, the most concentrated collection of sources, is in the Midwest. And when the meteorology in the summertime causes those pollution levels of sulfur dioxide to build up in the Midwest, in the Ohio Valley region, and it reacts with the sunlight and moisture and converts into sulfuric acid. And this sulfuric acid is transported northeast towards New York and New England and Canada. And if we get rain, then often this will wash out the acids into the rivers and lakes and streams. But if it does not rain, then the acids are present still in the air, and then they're there for us to breathe, and we do breathe them, especially in the summer times during these hazy, hot, humid days.
The Medical Association says Albany has violated national air quality standards for ozone over the past few years. Yet the Environmental Protection Agency has refused to act. The announcement of new opposition coincides with the resumption of state hearings on the proposed plant. As expected, InterPower disputed the claims. This is InterPower spokesman John D'Alessandro.
Part of the review process for our facility, we had to do a 1,500-page, 3-volume health risk assessment that looked at the facility and its emissions and determine what impact on the public health it would be. That health risk assessment, because of the extremely low emission levels we have, determined that there would be an insignificant effect on the public health. The second thing that comes to mind is that the American Lung Association, unfortunately, has not inquired of InterPower once any information, posed any questions to us about the project, nor have they requested any of the official documents or analyses that we have done. So, you know, I find it extremely odd that they've taken a public position on our project based on only, you know, half of the available information at best.
D'Alessandro adds InterPower would be far cleaner than any of the levels required by the new Federal Clean Air Act, an act for which the Lung Association has lobbied heavily.
So it seems kind of illogical to me that on, you know, the legislative regulatory front, they are expressing desire to see certain emission levels enforced, and here they are opposing a project that is far, far cleaner than those levels that they're supporting. I guess, and the fourth thing that comes to mind is that I think that they are shooting down the wrong pathway here. When you look at our emissions levels and see how extremely low they are, you realize that we are a step on the right path to cleaning up the air quality. InterPower doesn't exist now. Therefore, the air quality that they're concerned with and what they feel is a problem in the air quality is caused by other existing facilities. So to try to stop an extremely clean facility like InterPower and not address the root causes that have been working, you know, for years, 7 days a week, that cause the situation you're concerned with, to me is not an appropriate use of resources, effort, and time.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brian Shields.
A Syracuse area state senator says other states have been able to rehabilitate convicted sex offenders, so New York should learn the techniques. Nancy Lorraine Hoffman is on the Senate Crime and Corrections Committee, and she says she wants to learn for herself. Beth Engler reports.
Senator Hoffman says more than half of the state's sex offenders who are released will end up committing the same crimes again. The Syracuse Democrat says it's unacceptable to turn rapists loose without attempting to correct their behavior. That's why Hoffman will visit sex offender treatment facilities in three states which have reduced repeat crimes. Hoffman will visit facilities in Washington, Minnesota, and New Jersey. And just what kind of success have these states had in reducing repeat sex crimes? Only 23% of those released repeat crimes in Washington. The figure is 17% in New Jersey and just 9% in Minnesota. Hoffman argues that not only are the streets safer, but the programs also make good economic sense.
There was a study done in Massachusetts, and the Justice Department had a hand in it, that showed that there was a dollar savings to the state in court costs and prosecution and incarceration that more than offset the cost of implementing the program for sex offender treatment. So if you put aside for a second the human misery of sex crimes and just look at it in cold fiscal terms, it's good money to invest.
Hoffman says the Department of Corrections needs to do a better job of looking into such programs. She says the state's prison population of sex offenders has increased by almost 200% in the past 7 years, but treatment is still not included in the budget.
Their programs are limited to Division for Youth. They have no statistical results at this point, and anything that they have recently begun is really as a result of the pressure that's been in the last year. My understanding is that they operate only a sporadic group therapy session. It is nothing that is required of sex offenders.
Hoffman says the fact that the Division of Criminal Justice Services is funding the trip demonstrates Governor Cuomo's support for better programs. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Beth Engler.
We all know of the uphill battle challengers to Governor Cuomo face in this year's election, but other candidates facing incumbents for statewide office also face a tough challenge. Bernard Smith is the Republican candidate for Attorney General, trying to unseat three-term incumbent Robert Abrams, a Democrat. Abrams was last reelected in 1986 by a record margin. Smith says he was promised financial help in his campaign by the Republican State Committee, but as of yet, Smith says he's received none. The Long Island lawyer and former state senator says he's not angry at the state GOP, but that he was not made aware of the party's current financial situation.
I've been running a campaign that's not based on money. I would like to feel sometime in my lifetime that money isn't what buys elections. With the limited resources I have and with the energy that I've got, I've managed to hit most of the major portions of the state, and I continue to do so, and I'll do it until I run out of funds.
The debt faced by the state GOP this year has been as large as $1 million. Smith says despite the financial problems, the party's been very supportive of his campaign.
The county leaders from all over the state have been most helpful. They're cognizant of the fact that the state committee is short of funds, and they've done a lot as far as setting up events, as far as distribution of material, as far as advising as to local issues. Those things have been marvelous. That type of cooperation from the statewide organization made up primarily of the county leaders. And for that, I'm very grateful.
Elizabeth Del Tordo is the executive director of the Republican State Committee. She says they're doing all they can to help the GOP candidates.
We are obviously in a little financial crunch ourselves. We are being as supportive as we could to any of the candidates in much more than a financial situation. We have personnel here who are willing to help. We have, you know, some resources at State Committee that are here for the statewide candidates as well as legislative and congressional candidates. So I am not sure that there was a promise made. I am not aware of any promise that was made for funding. And, you know, clearly it's been no secret that we're not rolling in the money at the moment.
Republican State Committee Executive Director Elizabeth Del Tordo. As the controversy over the report of Governor Cuomo's commission on the Adirondacks in the 21st century continues, yet another group has stepped into the fold. The Residents' Committee to Protect the Adirondacks is now involved, and the committee made its presence known at a local meeting. Lee Farbman reports.
Adirondack residents filling a school gym were told to read Governor Cuomo's Adirondack Commission report before totally disregarding it. The Residents' Committee to Protect the Adirondacks argues the report, which would restrict development in the Adirondack Park, offers at least some good ideas. The group attracted over 150 people to Bolton Landing, just north of Lake George. They argue that some of the more outspoken opposition groups don't represent all 130,000 residents. Richard Stewart of North Creek says he, like many residents, used to hate the Adirondack Park Agency. But he says he'll consider the report because there are no alternatives.
I believe there would have been no need for the commission if the local governments had used proper planning within their own towns. How many towns within the park have a workable five-year plan? How many towns have considered the impact that development will have upon their water and sewer systems? How many towns have weighed the increased property values against the services that will be required in the future? I may not support every facet of the commission's report, but I have not seen anybody present a better plan.
But Adirondack Solidarity leader Howard Oben argues that few towns have planning boards because APA regulations were so strict. He, like many opponents, contends that development is not a threat, but he says the people who are moving in are attracted by the state.
Take a look at the areas that the environmentalists talk about on the overdevelopment, and you'll see areas like North Creek. When I think of North Creek, I think of Gore Mountain. When I think of Wilmington, I think of White Face Mountain. When I think of Lake Placid, I think of the ski jump, the bobsled run, I think of Orta, I think of the Olympic Training Center, and Saranac Lake is right next door. These are all facilities that the state built, promoting the tourist industry up in the area. When the people come up here, they like the area, they want to live here. That's a natural thing. When you come up into an area like this, you're going to want to stay here. And there's nothing wrong with that, and there's nothing illegal about that. And the people that live up here that own the property should not be penalized just because they own the property. Just because these other people want to come up here, the people that own the land here should not be penalized for it.
Author Bill McGivens spoke from the other side of the debate. As an environmentalist who has written on global warming, he claims residents have to see their land from a larger perspective. And he argues that if they don't want their life to change, they'll have to sacrifice.
We here enjoy every day the tangible benefit of restricting ourselves somewhat. We don't have to live in a place like New York City or like Conway, New Hampshire or Killington, Vermont. We live in some place unique and beautiful. And it's important, I think, that that be in the forefront when we talk about the Adirondacks.
Although committee organizers invited all opposition groups to speak, the Pro-Development Citizens Council of the Adirondacks did not approach the microphone. However, a resident calling himself John Doe warned that the commissioners were working for preservationist interests. Later identified as a member of the Adirondack Solidarity Alliance, he asked McGivern for evidence from his arguments.
The bill over here, I can't remember his last name, mentioned the greenhouse effect may degrade forest. That's a key word, may, okay? Lysol spray may help prevent certain types of viruses, too. They don't come out and say it does. Let's have some proof, okay, of global warming. Let's have some proof the ozone layer is being destroyed.
The Residents' Commission rebutted the idea that Adirondackers should consider the report. Regardless of its source, organizers estimate their membership has doubled in the past week to about 400 people, and they expect to reach the 1,500-person membership of the Adirondack Fairness Coalition in the near future. I'm Lee Farbman for the Legislative Gazette.
Joining us now with a look at some of the other events taking place in state government this week is Paul Rosenthal with our Legislative Notebook.
All undergraduates at the State University of New York would be required to pay a fee for basic health services under a plan being considered by SUNY administrators. The mandatory annual fee would be $50 for the school year starting September 1991 and $75 thereafter. Right now, half of the 26 state-operated campuses with health services have a voluntary fee. The other half offer basic services for free. The plan will be discussed by the SUNY Board of Trustees at its September meeting, but it's already drawing protests from student and faculty groups. Judy Krebs is president of SUNY's Student Association. She calls the plan backdoor tuition increases. SUNY's $1,350 a year tuition for its New York State residents has not gone up since 1983. SUNY officials say health services have steadily eroded due to budget cuts over the last decade, and they say the services are too important to be done away with. Norman Hostetter, Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, says a mandatory fee is the best way of ensuring consistent funding. The State Thruway Authority, saying it's constantly striving to make its 559-mile superhighway safer, is starting a year-long safety campaign. Officials intend to reduce the number of accidents along the highway. As part of the campaign, state police have been asked to crack down on speeders. So far this year, police have made over 48,000 speeding arrests along the thruway. That compares to over 46,000 for the same period in 1989. Safety leaflets will be handed out at thruway toll booths and information centers, with leaflets highlighting a different safety subject each month. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
Here to discuss the week in state politics are Brian Shields and Legislative Gazette political analyst Dr. Alan Shartok.
The Republican candidate for attorney general says the party did not live up to its promise to back him financially. The party says, we said we'd be supportive, but we didn't say anything about money.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. This party had so much trouble finding somebody for attorney general, because I was at the convention, that they were talking about, party loyalists all across the state who had no record at all. So they go and they get this guy, Bernard Smith, who has done so much in the past. He's been on the State Investigation Commission and other places, and a state senator, and they promise him this job. And they say, we'll be supportive. Now, I know that everybody I talked to down there kept going to the top guys in the party, Pat Barrett and others, saying, I'm not going to run unless you find some money to help me run with. And that was from the gubernatorial on down. And all kinds of assurances were given. So now the coffers are bare. This guy doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of winning. The party says, why should we give money to a guy who doesn't have a snowball's chance of winning? And they're not doing it. So because they're going to give their money to the one place where they have a shot, which is for the New York State Senate, which is real important. And to some degree, I suppose they have to give a little bit of money to Pierre Rinfret, who clearly is a losing proposition also. And there's nothing like getting some big fat cat donor to dole out some money and put it down the drain. And here's where the problem with that is. Number one, the fat cat knows that they're not going to get anything back for it. One of the reasons you give to political candidates is because if they win, you're going to get something back. And the second reason is that you offend the person who is going to win when you give the losing guy the money. So it's not easy to get these guys to part with their money to support losing propositions, which is exactly what needs to be done in order to find some money for people like Bernie Smith and Pierre and Fred to win. And it can't be done, and it isn't being done. And essentially, this election is over.
You recently had conversations with both of the Democratic candidates for state controller, Carol Bellamy and Andy Spano. What are your thoughts on that race? Any would you glean from those conversations?
Well, I must say I've known Carol Bellamy for 1,000 years. I really have. And she is a remarkably bright, quick, and tough woman who can make a lot of enemies. She's capable of going to war very easily with people. And I found in my conversation with her that she is the front runner, by the way, over Mr. Spano, who is a Westchester unknown. He's the county clerk. I found her to be pretty strident. I mean, you know, she knew what she wanted, and she was going to get what she wanted. And it was clear she was single-minded about it, and nothing has changed where Carol Bellamy is concerned. Spano, I was surprised at, because, you know, this is a guy who is looking for organizational help. 10 years ago, Carol Bellamy wouldn't have had a prayer of getting all the organizational support, but she's been endorsed by everybody, even though she's known as sort of to the left of the party, more liberal than most. She's gotten all of the endorsements around the state, people like the Speaker of the Assembly, Mel Miller, have helped her, and others. So here is Spano, who would ordinarily be the guy who gets all the party bosses like Leo O'Brien here in Albany to support him. And in fact, they all go out and support Carol Bellamy because she's been around longer, because they perceive that she's a potential winner, because there's a woman who balances the ticket, and because they've been having their arms twisted by a series of very prominent politicians. So my mind is that Carol Bellamy, unless she makes some terrible mistake, is going to win this fight.
The Legislative Gazette's political analyst, Alan Shartok, speaking with our Brian Shields. And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is produced by WAMC Albany. The program made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available by calling 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Gilletly. New York State Republicans win a battle against the Right to Life Party, for now. I'm Dave Gilletly, and coming up on this week's edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll take a look at Lewis Wien's ongoing effort to get on the Republican gubernatorial primary ballot against Pierre Infre. We'll also look at the problems of another Republican statewide candidate. Join us each week for the Legislative Gazette.